Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about the Clean Energy Community Initiative on the program today. It's a project that looks to advance the use of clean energy, not only in Wisconsin, but across the Midwest, probably the whole country for that matter. Our guest, Oliver Schmitz. Oliver's a professor of engineering physics at UW-Madison. He studies nuclear fusion and is the Associate Dean for Research Operations. He's also director of the Granger Institute for Engineering. So as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about clean energy? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Oliver Schmitz, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you very much, Larry, for having me on the show.
Let's talk clean air. Well, let's be kind of basic here. I think most of us have some idea about clean energy, but when you say clean energy, what are you talking about?
Yeah, so we in the College of Engineering have a broad range of expertise in very different energy technologies. So I look at it very broadly and very inclusively. In general, I think the main source technologies that one considers is wind, solar, geothermal sourcing. Then there's biofuels, biodegradable sources, and fusion and fission, so nuclear technologies.
So a lot going on there. And there's, you know, we were talking before the show and this sort of distinction that came up in Clara Neipert's mind and mine to some extent too was clean energy and then renewable energy. Is there a difference there or not?
So renewable energies, in my mind at least, are part of the clean energy initiatives, clean energy sources. If we talk about clean, obviously this adjective can mean all kinds of things.
Sure.
Clean in terms of emissions, clean in terms of waste that you produce, mm-hmm. clean of any disposal needs. So clean energy, in general, are all those sources that are optimized to be eco-friendly, environmentally friendly, and commensurable with mm-hmm. how we treat nature.
Yeah, and that's basically, you know, the focus, I think, of why clean energy is so important, the environmental part of it.
Yes. Yeah, I think we have obviously the climate change with the risk of climate disaster that drives us to consider carbon low carbon emission or no carbon emission sources. You know, that's also a national agenda, a worldwide agenda to reduce carbon emissions very rapidly to very low levels, to zero by 2050. That's the goal of the Biden administration. And this needs an all-hands-on-deck effort to actually reach this goal.
Yeah, and I guess that's why this Clean Energy Community Initiative, I think, can be really beneficial for us here in the state.
Yeah, we have asked ourselves the question, this endeavor that we have to undertake, that we want to undertake to protect our planet, really is equivalent or expands the Industrial Revolution. So how have Industrial Revolutions, how have they going on, how are technologies implemented, often without asking the impacted communities, without asking for consent, for social acceptance, but moreover, without asking for their needs and priorities, so the adaptation of the technology can be quick, rapid, and welcomed in the communities. And this is really our goal here, to go through a discovery process collectively with many partners, with the communities on board, and do a grassroots effort practically to build technologies around community needs, to empower communities to make their choices and have the social acceptance and the implementation acceptance right away.
Yeah. Well, Phil in Ridgeway has a comment that I guess relates in part to this. Let's go there. Phil, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks. This isn't a technical question about improved clean energy. This is a question that I think, based on our issues of security and delivery of a consistently available grid, how do we protect the systems? How do we protect pipelines overhead lines, whatever it may be, so that we have that. And is this initiative that you're talking about taking that concern into consideration?
Yeah, good question. Thanks, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, protection from natural disaster, obviously we have to design transmission lines properly. One compelling part of a community-driven process, if you think about renewable energies, about wind and solar, for instance, they need storage. If solar is produced locally and at a capacity that's sufficient for a rural community, for instance, and we develop storage technology that they can have their own independent, reliable microgrid that powers itself, then they become much less dependent on the transmission line, and that is a way of protecting the infrastructure and the reliability of the energy source.
So as you look at that, you might envision not everybody connected to the same grid in some fashion.
That could be one part of the solution, in particular here in Wisconsin. That's something we discovered in the initial many conversations that we had, and I know utilities are aware of it and the service commission is aware of it, that there is a desire of energy reliability and also energy dependence. If we think about tribal communities, for instance, they have a very high degree, or I learned from several of them that they have a quite high degree of desire for energy sovereignty, and what it really means for them to do this in a way that is compatible with protecting nature. So combining these two values of the communities and create a reliable and energy independent solution for them, that's a very important priority. And the question is, which technology can we provide as researchers? How can we wire in investment space, startup space? How can we wire in industry, utilities, policy, all these multi-sectors to make a solution happen for this community and others?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Number to call if for you to join in with a question or comment. I hope you will. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can shoot us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. So a lot of partners involved in this community and clean energy community initiative. I wanted to get the term right there.
Yes, yeah, we have spun a network of probably at this point about 120 partners from these different sectors that I just mentioned, so across the board. Because to us, it's important to build it on community priorities, needs, and values connected to technology that we, as well as industry research, can deliver. But there's an interlayer in it. We have to have industry on board, policy on board, investment on board to make it happen in Wisconsin in the different fashion mm-hmm. that a community wants.
Yeah. So what's the potential here in the state?
I think the potential for Wisconsin is we are looking at a transformation that, as I said, maybe is exceeding the Industrial Revolution. So the Industrial Revolution has made Wisconsin the tool shop of the world. We had big manufacturing. We still have state-of-the-art manufacturing, new manufacturing. So there's a huge proposition out there for economic development around clean energy technologies. What can we do in the state to bring efforts that pilot solutions, which also would create a manufacturing and supply chain in Wisconsin that could then export to the world? I think that's a almost unprecedented economic benefit that's out there, but we have to start mm-hmm. to get ready for it and compete also for the infrastructure resources that have come up recently through the mm-hmm. bipartisan mm-hmm. infrastructure law, the Inflation Reduction Act, and the CHIPS and Science Act. There are almost $400 billion out there. These are multi-sector proposals, large-scale proposals, and we need in the state to get ready to be fit to compete for these resources and boost our clean energy economy.
And we've got, we certainly have the person power and the brain power to do it here. I don't have any doubt at all about that.
Yeah, I think we have the brain power, and we have also a very attractive piloting landscape, in my mind. We have.
So what's that like?
We have two big cities that have their need their independent solution. They have specific needs for their clean energy transition. We have a lot of rural communities that have yet another proposition of how they want to realize this transformation. If you think about farm communities, what do they do with digester technology? How can we transform manure into energy? This could be a strength technology here in Wisconsin. We have a variety of independent communities that are very keen on energy sovereignty, so smaller scale microgrid solutions for individual communities. These are all replicable solutions that we could ship out to the world once we have piloted, demonstrated them, developed the investment infrastructure around them, developed policy models that can be exported, then these would be shovel-ready projects elsewhere.
So this is not something that we're going to have running next week.
I think some of this, at least in terms of acquiring the resources, has started already. There are a variety of large-scale efforts in the state, independently organized, but we are trying to connect some of them to compete for these big infrastructure resources that come out of the out of Washington at the moment that the state has benefited already from. So I think we are just at the right time to build this very rapidly. Time is urgent to get the resources and build this infrastructure.
So now when you talk about, you did mention Madison, I guess, in Milwaukee, and you mentioned rural communities, but what's the approach? Are you thinking of, is this a top-down kind of thing, or are you looking for communities to come to you, or is the term community a broad, by you know, the whole state is the community?
Yeah, that's a very good question. When we go out with the title Clean Energy Community Initiative, that's a question that we get all the time. And at the end, we want to create a transformational approach, a transformational network that's ready to let everybody in Wisconsin benefit from it. Now, when we think about everybody, what it means in the clean energy transition, everybody has a different opinion about what is the right fit in the solution. Some like solar, some like wind, some like me like nuclear fusion, which is maybe 20 years down the road, but that could be a perspective. So how can we create in this diversity of different approaches that's available an agreement which solutions can be piloted and implemented and then economically shipped out, market ready to other customers in the world? It has a lot of questions on the policy side. So I think the connection of these different solutions into one grid in Wisconsin, into one energy solution in Wisconsin, is a really challenging process that we have to undertake as a community as a whole.
So when you're talking about market or shipping it out, describe what that would look like.
Yeah, for instance, I just can come up with one very concrete example from my own field, fusion. You probably know this is the energy of the stars, or the sun produces energy. It's something that mankind has been working on for 50, 60 years, has been demonstrated that in principle we can do it. Now we have the new technology here at UW-Madison that could make it happen. And we said to many stakeholders in the state, if we make it happen in 10 or 15 years, we need the manufacturing supply chain, we need the workforce, we need investment, we need the industry to buy in, we need the policy to buy in. Prepare all these different elements into one scenario that then can be established and demonstrated so other states could say, oh, that indeed it works, the technology is there, but also the entire implementation works out. What did Wisconsin do to make this happen? What is the magic spell here? Let's go for it and import the same technology.
Our guest today, Oliver Schmitz, professor of engineering physics at UW-Madison. He studies nuclear fusion. He's associate dean for research operations. We're talking with him about initiatives to strengthen the use of clean energy in Wisconsin through gathering community input to some extent, and then taking that, making it work here, and maybe exporting it out and allowing other states and other places to be able to benefit from what has been developed here. Questions for him, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address, ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert is our producer today. Tyler Denner, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at clean energy for Wisconsin. Oliver Schnitz is professor of engineering physics and also director of the Granger Institute for Engineering. And he is in charge or directs, I guess I could should say, the Clean Energy Initiative. We've been talking about what it is and how it's going to work, or how it is working right now. What's the process like? And I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us to ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call. Lucy in Madison, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm concerned that energy companies like Madison Gas and Electric and Lion Energy are putting a lot of solar arrays out in the countryside, and I think they're not doing anything in urban areas. And I drive by and I see many, it looks like acres of flat roofs, you know, for industrial buildings, and of course people would like it on their houses. And I think there's both a concern about how to organize that for them, and there's an economic concern for them because in some way they have to share the income with the owner of the property and so forth. But I think that would be far more efficient than taking up a lot of green space out in the country, and I'm wondering how to get more of that happening.
Yeah,
I think that's a great example where the community feedback into a technology deployment process is valuable. Our initiative, we will be rolling out what we call community discovery workshops. So run across the state several workshops, go into specific communities, invite communities to come and do joint value discovery with them to learn exactly about such concerns and such propositions, and then include an information element where, for instance, in this case, utilities can deliberate about their choices and what are the pros and the cons of a given choice. And this conversation process, we hope, will lead to new solution ideas that then can be brought forward for implementation. This is a very specific one, which is already based on a concrete deployment, solar in the fields. But there are many other technologies that are out there which you would like to inform about, and then communities could consider them, maybe even as an alternative to solar or a different type of storage of solar, so that that these kinds of concerns are addressed.
Thinking about that, when my home where I grew up was in a rural community, and now right across the street, across the road, it's not a street really, it's a rural area, the farmer sold off his, or I don't know if he sold it or rented it or whatever, but it's a whole solar array across the road, right straight across the road.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, solar has become economically viable with decreasing prices for the solar cells. So it is a technology that can be deployed with it's cost competitive. It induces at the same time a relatively large challenge because the sun shines only a fraction of the day, yeah. And we have energy use also on other times of the day. And then if you build it on wind, you know, maybe the wind doesn't blow and then there's a gap. So there needs to be a baseload capacity in any grid practically. What's the technology which you want to deploy there? Is it still coal or gas? Is it fission or fusion? Which other technologies do we have? Or can we build the storage capacity? So that's one of these integration aspects that the industry as well as the R&D space has to provide solutions for, and then communities and the citizenship as a whole has to vet it and select from them which are viable for their communities.
Yeah, and just to take Lucy's comments a step further, if you've got solar, I mean, is it more efficient to have or better to have solar on everybody's house or have I mean, it's probably, I can see maybe a combination of the two working.
I think that's as far as I know, still under debate. I can talk about one example from my home country in Germany. I remember in the end of the 1990s, there was a 100,000 roof program in Germany to make solar viable. And it turned out that outfitting all these roofs individually with power, bringing the power into the grid, you know, return the meter practically, comes with all kinds of policy and legislative challenges. But it also comes with the implementation challenge that now you have these 100,000 or soon 500,000 or 1 million individuals suppliers that can fail, that can have issues. So if you are a utility, probably you want to go for that large plant that you can control, in quotation marks, also from the technology, because the reliability of the technology is really what we hear across the board is the value that everybody agrees on.
Well, I tell you what, you don't want to have the power go off, the heat go off in Wisconsin today.
Yep, that would not be a good situation at all.
That would not be a good situation. at all. Lucy, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate it. Brett in Wauwatosa, we'll go to you next. Hi, Brett.
Good morning. I appreciate the idea that we would diversify our energy sources. I just feel like when we label these initiatives and it sounds great, we're clean energy, we still haven't found a way to recycle wind farm blades. They just sit. They don't decompose. They don't anything. They're just piling up, and they only last for so long. And by policy, you know, We Energies is forced to create wind farms in order to meet these green initiatives. Yet it's more expensive. It doesn't, you know, fit the model because, you know, it only is during the day, the same time as solar. You know, we don't have those storage areas, but yet, you know, we can't implement nuclear today because there's such a reticence on the policy end to open that up. And
Well, comments on that?
Yeah, you know, I acknowledge these concerns. And as I said, I'm not a wind or solar researcher. I'm not necessarily made my choice personally. In my mind, a reliable clean energy solution has a very reliable baseload source of some sort. I would favor at the moment fission for a while and transfer to fusion, so you have a safe and reliable grid. And then one can fill in as much as possible and as much as, from the landscape and climate conditions possible, wind, solar, geothermal, and reduce the need for maybe the baseload capacity. But at the same time, I agree, we need to deploy the other sources, meaning in this case wind and solar, also in a clean and a renewable fashion, meaning that we have to have solutions for the waste that is generated, which on its own at the moment, as you point correctly out, is a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when you look at fusion energy, which is, you know, your area, I bet you'd love to have the solution to fusion energy. The difference between fission and fusion, maybe just in a few sentences, maybe explain what the difference is the problem is with one versus the other.
Yeah, so in general, the basis of the technology, it is just the opposite. In fission, you have heavy elements, uranium, and you split it. And by splitting it, you create two lighter elements, and that releases energy. So splitting of heavy elements is fission. Fusion is the total opposite. You take the lightest elements that there is, hydrogen, some isotopes of them, and fuse them, so bring them together so they mate and create helium, and that emits an even larger amount of energy. So that's fusion together versus fission dividing. Fusion is what our sun does and will be doing hopefully for many billions of years, and all stars are doing as their energy source. Doing this on Earth is tricky because you see the sun does it. It's a huge, huge star. It has a huge mass. It compresses the elements, so this fusion, this bringing together, can happen. What do we do on Earth to make it happen? We put the medium into very strong magnetic fields, and that, you know, was a limit for the last decades because we had a limit on the magnetic field strength. Now there's a whole new technology out on the market which is called high temperature superconductors. So we can create unprecedented magnetic field strengths. So we build magnetic bottles, and we can build stronger magnetic bottles than we ever could. And that has led to an advent of about 40 startup companies around the world on fusion. There's an investment of more than $4 billion into fusion just in the U.S. over the last couple of years. And there's a regimented program now to make a fusion pilot plant happening by the beginning of the next decade. This is a very, very ambitious program. Out of the MIT, for instance, there's a startup that wants to build a pilot plant of first high-temperature superconducting device by the mid of this decade. We have two startups here out of Wisconsin. So it's a really vibrant field, and I feel if any country can really make it happen with the investment capital and with the spirit, let's do it, it's America. And so the physics is there. We need to develop the technology.
And we get that running.
Yeah.
Once that, I mean, if we solve that, you and others solve that problem, our energy needs are meeting our energy needs.
It's a done deal, one would say, if you are lobbying for the technology. But as a scientist, you know, you can compare it to the first engine that was created. That's what we are really aiming for. And then you have many, many decades of developments until it is mature and it's a perfect process. So I think it's not an easy technology that you implement, get right out of the bat, but it's really feasible now and it's on the horizon. So in my mind, we need bridge technologies now that can do the base load security that mm-hmm. is then aided by renewables, wind, solar, geothermal. And then at one time, we hopefully as mankind have pushed enough to replace whatever base load capacity we choose by fusion.
Wow. Yeah. Won't that be nice? Jacob in Madison, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a concern about the waste. Could you discuss the waste? I think that the propellers for wind farms are one issue, but what about nuclear waste?
Yeah, so that's a fundamental difference between fission and fusion. Fusion, because we use these light elements and fuse them, and the energy output is really high, we have no big waste. I mean, no waste comparable to fission, to the regular nuclear waste that you're probably thinking about. Fission, we have a large pile of uranium typically, and it's burned down, so it's kind of a burner principle, and this generates a fair amount of radioactive waste. However, when you compare it to the waste that's produced, for instance, from coal, the amount of waste that is generated is much larger with coal because the energy density of fission is so high. So it is highly radioactive nuclear waste that we have to store somewhere. Or if we were really serious about fission, we could develop a transmutation technology chain where we transform this waste into less radioactive waste and again into less radioactive waste. And by doing this, we win a lot of energy. So what we are doing at the moment, we use only a minuscule part of the energy that's stored in the whatever 500 ton of uranium that is in a reactor, and then we store it. So if we were to go into a transmutation technology, into other technologies of the nuclear fission industry, then one could transform this energy and transform the waste both together and harvest it. So there are technologies, but they all need to be developed as well.
But that's being worked on.
Yeah, this is an active field. You know, probably in France, where they have the majority, 70% or so of their nominal energy capacity covered by fission, they have transmutation facilities. They are working on next-generation reactors. We here at UW, in my own department, engineering physics, soon to be nuclear engineering and engineering physics, we have a second-to-none program in graduate education. And, you know, these are the bright minds that can make everything happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Jacob, thank you very much for calling. Jack in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Jack.
Yeah, I've got a kind of a question here about the nuclear business here. You're going to look at doing something with fission, but do you have any kind of preliminary estimates about what kind of capitalization you would need to, say, build a 1,000-megawatt power plant? And incidentally, whatever happened to the breeder reactor?
Yeah. That's the type of technology I'm discussing. There are next generation reactor concepts that would use a fuel different that can generate a fuel chain of different stages that will harvest the entire energy capacity that's in the fuel, and at the same time change the level of radioactive waste one has to deal with. I have no direct capitalization information or studies right out of the bat here available, but aspect or one interest that I'm hearing, that we are hearing as a department and with partners often in the state, is the prospect of microreactors. So we think differently. We think away from 1 gigawatt stations somewhere in the country, or two of them for Wisconsin or so, but we are thinking about microreactors that can be distributed, that have entirely different technology handling chains in terms of, you know, how do you deliver the fuel, how do you take the fuel out. You might just take the entire reactor unit out and replace it. So there is an entire new set of technology evolving. But I think, for instance, if we imagine this community discussion, we go out to communities and do our community discovery workshops, but really the information basis for these kind of conversations isn't available. So it is our obligation, mandate, and I think also pleasure as academia, together with industry partners, to inform the public and form a common basis for these type of deliberations, because at the end we have to find solutions that are agreeable by everybody.
Jack, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's see. We got Russell in Bad River? No, we don't have Russell. We've got John in Appleton. I think we've kind of dealt with this a bit, but John, go ahead.
Yeah, so I appreciate the information about dealing with the nuclear fission waste. I would change this question to be, okay, we know how to do it. How do we actually go about executing that? And then the second question was related to what, if any, waste and processes for dealing with nuclear fusion in the future. So how do we address both of those waste issues sooner than later?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a really broad question. If I had the answer, I probably wouldn't be sitting here, have a large company doing all this. There are a variety of solutions on the fission side, kind of solitarily without considering fusion. There's, as well as in fusion, a large startup space, large investments into these Generation 4 reactors, into new technology in fusion to burn down the fuel, use the entire energy capacity in it to build new transmutation strains, new waste strains. There are solutions, one example, one concrete one, where fusion and fission can go hand in hand. For instance, in the Hanford nuclear storage site, there's a quite massive amount of burned nuclear waste from the fission plants in the U.S. stored. We developed here at UW-Madison a fusion concept that we are just building at the Physical Science Laboratory of the university. It's a $10 million ARPA-E funded project. ARPA-E is Advanced Research Project Agency out of the Department of Energy. So they do the high-risk, high-reward projects. They gave us $10 million to say, use these high-temperature magnets, these high-temperature superconducting magnets, new technology, revive a fusion system that was shown not to be possible with the weak magnets in the 1990s, try to build it because it's a very compact and easy to build system. And if this works, it could be a neutron source, and these neutrons could be used to transmutate the waste on the Hanford side down to less radioactive level and make the storage a whole different class of an undertaking. So here's one new example, $10 million seed funding. We have built actually a startup around it to nurture this, to get more capital into this development, and hopefully we can make a contribution to solving the fission waste problem by fusion.
Yeah, that's great. John, thank you so much. And as you say, on the waste side for fusion...
Yeah, sorry, I missed this one.
Yeah.
This is you can imagine it. It's a little bit a limping comparison, but if you think about large medical imaging facilities in the state, large medical imaging hospitals, they have radioactive components at the end of their lifetime from X-rays, from if they operate accelerators and so on. We are looking at roughly this type of nuclear waste after just a couple of years. So in a fusion plant, it would literally look like you let it sit for 10 years. You are very soon after some decades at the hand-on level, and you either refurbish or decommission it. So the risk potential of this waste is an entirely different one. It is also not easy at all to mobilize it because these are steels and structural components that are irradiated by X-rays, which you know from your medical imaging facility. So it's an entirely different type of nuclear waste.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get back to the clean energy initiative, the community part of it. And so what's the plan? You've kind of in broad strokes, but I mean, are you going to be going out to communities themselves?
Yes. We are this afternoon, we have another meeting of our planning council, and we will roll out what we call community discovery workshops soon. The goal is to go out into communities. So if anybody is interested to have a session with us, please send me just an email. We will gladly consider to do some of these workshops or one of these workshops in your community. Want to go out. It will have a component of the information. It will have a component of discovery. We're working with a facilitator who knows how to do this, you know, to get the information out of a good conversation, of an open conversation, of a trustworthy and safe conversation. That's very important to us. And we want to do many of them in the next couple of months. And then we have a basis that we also need already now in all these big proposals. They're asking us for community benefits plans, but, you know, how do you want to talk about community benefits if you haven't talked to the communities yet?
Absolutely.
And that's really our goal for the next couple of months.
That was my PhD research, was getting community input into planning for change.
Actually, the Department of Life Science Communication is one of the partners in the proposal.
Yeah, I know. That's my home department. So it's nice to have that part. And so now, let's say somebody's listening and they say, gee, maybe we could have one of these workshops in our community. What do they do to at least request?
Yeah, send me an email, o.schmitz@wisc.edu or College of Engineering. You will find me on the website, and we'll gladly get in contact with you and discuss actually which type of community discovery workshop you would see beneficial to your community.
And so if they go to the College of Engineering website, they're going to find the Clean Energy Initiative.
Yes, they will find the Clean Energy Initiative. We have a Clean Energy website on our. So if you look for Clean Energy College of Engineering, there's a dedicated website to it, and the Clean Energy Community Initiative is on this one.
And then they can just use that to email you, and there you go.
Exactly.
Well, this has been a real pleasure, Oliver. Thank you so much for taking time. I hope we can get you back at some point and talk about this again. I'd love to know how these community projects, you know, that was my research. I would love to know how those meetings and so forth go and kind of what resulting plans come from that.
Yeah, thanks. I would gladly come back, and thanks for having me today.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Oliver Schmitz, our guest today. This is a really cool project, isn't it? I love the idea of getting community input into planning for change, because that's what I was doing when I was working on my PhD. Oliver Schmitz is a professor of engineering physics at UW-Madison. He studies nuclear fusion, as I said. He's associate dean for research operations. Well, coming up, we're going to talk about lightning strikes, and we're going to talk about atmospheric rivers, and probably take your questions about the weather as well. Our weather guy's next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.